Now, my dear task now is to introduce Father Nick King, who is a Jesuit member of Campion Hall, which is a postgraduate training institute in the city. He is a university chaplain, a bit like Aidan Hampton, but a bit older. He's also my spiritual director. Nick has preached at St. Aldate's before, and he's here to talk about the rule of life. So he's going to speak for 10 minutes or so, and then answer questions. And we'll take questions from the floor for 10 minutes or so. So think of a question you'd like to ask a Jesuit priest. Here we go. Let's welcome Nick.
Thanks very much indeed, Charlie. There's a text. I was asked to give a text somewhat at the last moment, but I don't regret the text that I've chosen, and I think it might come up on the screen somewhere with a bit of luck. But this is the text, and this text, you'll hear a slightly different version from me from what you've got on the screen there. It's what things could look like if we get the rule of life right. And you know it by heart. If you know the words, join in. The crowd of those who'd come to faith was of one heart and one soul. And no one said anything was their own private property, and they had everything in common. And with great power, the apostles were giving witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. And great grace was on absolutely everybody, for no one was poor among them. All those who owned estates or houses, they sold them and brought the proceeds of what they'd sold, and they put them at the feet of the apostles, and it was distributed to each one in accordance with their need. That's a handy text. If you hear nothing else from me, hear that. So I've got to do three things. I want to talk in just 10 minutes, and there is a clock. Yes, there's a clock. I'm going to talk in 10 minutes, and then you've got to ask difficult questions. Nothing is excluded. So essential background. First, I'm a Jesuit priest. You know, that's the worst kind. That means we go in for a very long training. It was exactly 16 years from the day I entered to the day I took my final vows as a Jesuit, and then, of course, I was ready for retirement. When they heard about the long training, my sibling said, "Oh, yes, that's very good for him. He's an extremely slow learner." The big deal in Jesuit formation is that twice in that long period of training, we make the 30-day retreat, spiritual exercises in silence over a month. It marks you that. But I do recommend the silence. And most of our time, we run away from it. I really recommend it to you if you dare. And then each year, we renew that with an 8-day, again, silent retreat. And again, I can recommend that to you. And I know there are people here who've done that. Then the third thing to say is that my rule of life is not your rule of life. I have, for example, the odd business of being celibate. And it is an odd business, and you can't do it, nor, by the way, can you be a disciple of the Lord, unless you're spending time in prayer, deepening that relationship, without which we can't be disciples. So all I'm suggesting is that from whatever I say, you just choose what seems helpful. And if one thing is helpful, then we've achieved our goal. That's a result, as football managers say. So look, this is my daily routine. It's not supposed to be your daily routine, but just choose from it anything that might happen. So I get up quite early. I have a cup of coffee, except, alas, in Lent. And it's Lent just now, so I'm feeling that. And then what I do immediately over the cup of coffee, or not cup of coffee, is to read over the readings of the day. And if I'm preaching on Sunday, which generally I am, I read over the readings for Sunday. Then I go into what I call spiritual reading. It could be anything, but anything that sort of moves me into an atmosphere of prayer, lifting up the mind and heart to God. Then we've got what we call the breviary, which is a group of prayers. So I do the big chunk of that then, which is called Office of Readings. That's a series, you do three psalms and two readings. It goes on for quite a long time if you're not quite in the mood. And then I do, Matins. After that, I have 50 minutes of silent prayer, and that's absolutely the heart of the matter. I couldn't honestly tell you what happens during it. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. Sometimes I fall asleep and the Lord doesn't seem to mind. Sometimes I feel this is boring, but I know I cannot be without it, and under no circumstances would I do it for less than 30 minutes. I mean, if sometimes you really press, it's 30 minutes, but nevertheless. Then during the rest of the day, sometime I do midday prayer, very short prayer, but it's just a way of stopping the rush and saying, right, let's pay attention to the Lord. And then later on in the evening, I do evening prayer, sometime before supper if I can. And then last thing at night, if I can, I do Compline, and you know about the examen prayer because it's in your rule of the rule of St. Aldate's. And that's by that time I'm getting pretty unconscious because I get up so early. By about 9 o'clock at night, my head is falling off. But I try and do that. And then each day there's a Eucharist. We've got a slightly different approach to it from you have. So we have it every day. And normally I'd be presiding at that. Sometimes I'm just attending. So that's the rule of the day, and we're still within 10 minutes, so we've done very well. So I hope you're thinking of these difficult questions. So let me make four observations. One is this routine that I've described to you, rather briefly, is a routine I wouldn't be without. I've worked it out over the years, and I know I need that or something very like it. Secondly, I'm very well aware of the excuses I make. I am too tired, I'm too busy. And I've lost count of the number of times I've said to people, the busier you are, the more you need to pray. Let me say that to you today, it's really true. But here's a good excuse, I'm too ill. Now sometimes that does happen. I mean, obviously we can be victims of hypochondria, but sometimes genuinely I am just too ill to pray. If that's the case, then that's when church starts to mean something, because then you discover that you're lifted up by the prayers of other people at the time when you simply can't do it. And that's really important. So the discovery that we need the church in prayer is very important. Then thirdly, prayer is an act of surrender to God. Without it, you and I simply cannot be busy disciples. And the people we're working for, if we're not praying, they will know. They might not articulate it quite like that, but they will know that we're no longer in touch with base. And that's what prayer does to you. And then the last thing I want to say, and it is within our 10 minutes, is the importance of your questions, because I'm a very strange animal, and you may want to know more about it. So over to you.